public input. Do we, here we have quite a few people have signed up. Just to review the commission rules, so all of you understand, we hold people to the rules in order to be fair. We allow 3 minutes for testimony. We'd like you to come forward. I'll call you up two at a time. I'd like you to sit in front of a microphone, and you don't have to speak too closely to the mic. But when you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. If you do not, I will politely or not so politely interrupt you. So the first two people are William Willett and Rob Cavanaugh. If you'd please come forward. Willett and Cavanaugh. Do you want to?
I can't sit down. I've got to
work. Okay, fine. Sorry. Mr. Willett. Go ahead.
Okay, good morning, Chair Wecker and commissioners. My name is William Willett. I'm here to voice my opposition to the proposed hydraulic rules, which will be decided this afternoon. More specifically, the department's decision to establish a structure for adaptive management that responds to changing science and technology and or the results of the effectiveness monitoring. Adaptive management has been touted as the newest and greatest natural resource management tool, although it suffers an 80% failure rate. It is well documented that for this program to work, there must be a long-term commitment, buy-in within the agency and managers, and it must be adequately funded for the long term. This initial rulemaking package had proposed rules to support adaptive management, but they were removed. I want to think as a result of public comment. It was not until the CR 102 was filed that adaptive management surfaced again. Before you decide to adopt these proposed rules, I want to be sure that you are aware that the department is putting the cart before the horse. Each of the five distinct steps of the adaptive management requires a robust decision process and monitoring programs, and then developing a change, which in this case would be rules, and the process starts over. You can easily see how expensive this process is, and the department has not secured an avenue to pay for this program. This would have to be obtained through legislation. If you adopt the rules today, the department states that they will begin to develop and implement adaptive management. I, as a taxpayer, would like to know how the department intends to pay for this lifelong program and off whose back. Chair Wecker and commissioners, the cost-benefit analysis did not even delve into the costs of this program in relation to the rules, so there is no actual way to determine how much this rulemaking will really cost. Are you willing to adopt a set of rules that immediately upon adoption upsets the department's limited budget? Do the appropriate thing, render a decision not to adopt as proposed, and direct the removal of all references to adaptive management until such time that a program can be developed and funded before being implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let me call Cindy Aaliyah.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Rob Cavanaugh, and my purpose here today is to present you with a document called Range Management, an analysis of 9 federal, public, and tribal grazing programs in Washington State. And I want to present this document to you today for your review. This was written in 1994. At that time, I was active in the Audubon Society. This was edited by your own staff. And we hope that this will lead the way to the second edition that's coming out in January. That document shows that there are many, many problems facing our state wildlife area managers. They're conflicted. You have a policy that says all grazing must benefit wildlife. They know that. I wrote House Bill 1309 to protect the riparian areas. They know that. But then they're getting pressures from headquarters staff and the Cattlemen's Association to load up our ranges with cattle. And why? Because prices for cattle are $2 a pound now. It's astounding. It's never been this high. I was getting $1.12 10 years ago. So the reason you're going to get pressured to put more and more cattle on our state wildlife areas is economic. Now, your mission is to protect, preserve wildlife and native fishes. That's your mission. Doesn't say a thing about raising cattle, does it? And yet, when it gets down to the wildlife area manager, they're getting all this pressure put on them. And some of them have actually had to leave the agency because of this pressure. And that's Mrs. Cindy Confer, one of our best wildlife area managers up in the Medhow. And it was a darn shame. Other things that are happening, we have the pilot grazing project. That's the second pilot. The first pilot was over in the Whiskey Dick in Kittitas. That was a total failure. This one is a total failure as well. And it's cost the state $1 million. When you add up the money you paid WSU and then the L&I claims for that man who's permanently injured, it's about $1 million. It's lost forever. And so, you know, there's a lot of improvements that can be made here, and we're asking you to make them. I've outlined in my testimony sheet some things that you can do to alleviate this problem, follow your own policy and principles, and have them enforced. Because right now, the agency doesn't even count the cows going on our state lands, which is a shame. The last thing I wanted to tell you about was I'm petitioning you for rulemaking under 3405 to write rules to enforce the policies and rules that you already have. And so I hope that you'll do that. And I have the documents right here. And here it is.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. See you next year.
Georgia Prosek. Okay, Ms. Aaliyah.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Cindy Aaliyah. I'm here representing Citizens Alliance for Property Rights. CAPR has made extensive comments, and they're in the record. We provided you a 30-page document in our petition to appeal this HPA. So I won't go into all the details that we've already discussed in the past. However, I do want to make mention that the tribes and various environmental organizations, your stakeholders, have praised this rulemaking process and have commented often that the proposed rule changes have not gone far enough. However, the Washington DOT, counties, cities, the mining community, and property rights advocates, many of these who are not your stakeholders, have stressed their opposition to the rulemaking process. And CAPR has filed our petition, as you know, which you denied. We have filed an appeal with the governor's office to this petition, and we want to know why we would proceed with voting today on this while the whole process is still open. So CAPR is requesting, in view of our appeal and in view of last week's document dump on the website, that the governor's office and the public be given at least 30 days for an additional comment period to review the most recent documents and changes and to be allowed to comment on them. Thank you.
Thank you. Patty Carter. Okay, Ms. Prosek.
Hi, my name's Georgia Prosek. I have lived on Clark's Creek in Puyallup for 15 years. I am passionate about its condition and restoration. It is because of Clark's Creek that I have turned my attention to the Puyallup Historical Hatchery and became involved as a founding director of the Puyallup Historical Hatchery Foundation. One of our missions is to teach proper watershed care, and we intend to do that using Clark's Creek as a hands-on example. With that being said, what happened with the HPA permitting process this year for a small, safe 400-foot demonstration project of silt removal, which we have 6 to 8 feet of in Clark's Creek, is beyond unbelievable. It is shameful. Language was written into our permit, language not even approved by you yet. That not only escalated the project and cost of the project by hundreds of thousands of dollars, it was actually over $100,000, it prevented it from having any qualified bidders at all. Think about that. Not one bidder. Ask yourself why. And it leads back to the HPA language with all of its unreasonable, no common sense mandates. And this is the same language you are asked to approve today. If you truly want a perfect example of what will happen if you hurry this language through, reread what actually took place in Puyallup this year. Employees jumped the gun and used the very thing you are now looking at, incorporated it into the permit we needed to do a simple silt removal demonstration. And it shut down a perfect opportunity for all of us to have seen the restoration work and its result and its possibilities for using it in the future. Streams in our state and in need of silt removal, which there are many that need restoration for the recovery of salmon. This language will make it near impossible for us and future concerned caring people to support and participate in stream restoration. I have to say that when I moved there, there was salmon just going up the creek all the time, just hundreds and hundreds. Now there's very few. They cannot survive in the silt. The silt covers up the eggs. It's just a mess. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Cunningham. You missed Carter.
Good morning, commissioners. I appreciate being here with you this morning. We come kind of on an annual basis, and I'm here with a big thank you to all of you. And I presented the letter, and there's some photos with that, two pages I hope that you'll see that kind of categorize what's happened over this last year. So with that, dear commissioners, the Puyallup Historical Hatchery Foundation is pleased once again to come before you today to express our appreciation of the ongoing partnership with Fish and Wildlife at the Puyallup Hatchery. The past year has been truly amazing. Through hard work, donated funding, no tax dollars, and lots of volunteer hours from many, we accomplished our goal of opening the Educational Center on May 10th with a large celebration. The beautiful addition provides informative wall displays, educational videos, a conference room for small groups, and a fishing hole room with information of every sort in regards to fishing. The remodel, and Brad will be happy to know, was ADA compliant, so everyone can come and enjoy it. When Jim Jenkins announced at our grand opening celebration that the Puyallup Historical Hatchery Foundation would be presented with the Educator of the Year Award from Fish and Wildlife, we were speechless. What a humbling, unexpected moment for us. Several of our directors traveled to Olympia to accept this award with great appreciation. On October 11th, we held the first Salmon Homecoming event for the Puyallup Hatchery in partnership with many others. It was a huge success, with over 600 people in our little town coming. Staff from Fish and Wildlife did guided tours up to the spawning area of Clark's Creek. Music filled the air from a bluegrass band as families participated in all sorts of environmental learning activities, ate salmon burgers, and checked out the new educational center. Such a perfect venue. We look forward to having it be an annual event. As tours increase, we are working to establish a dedicated field trip fund to help with transportation costs. Brad will also be happy to know that we had an ADA bus show up with wheelchair children, and it's in one of the pictures that you'll see in the packet I gave you. Director Richard Johnson, a retired hatchery manager from Fish and Wildlife, which some of you may know, has recently retired. He created a volunteer manual to train more of our tour guides. We are also working with the Puyallup School District personnel to increase educational opportunities using the hatchery and are creating a hatchery management course for high school age students. In the short 2 years, your Puyallup Hatchery, through the opportunity that you provided us, is really putting itself on the map. Thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege to help.
Boy, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Commissioner Smith.
Thank you for the call out to the ADA. But I don't know if you've done this yet, but you might want to get in touch with Bellingham Technical College, because they have a hatchery program that is quite nice, and it's a brand new building up there. And Ryan Vasek is the person who teaches. But if you need contacts, but you can just call Bellingham Technical College, because I think they could provide some pro bono or some student input, just a bridge building.
Well, I was going to get with you on the ADA stuff, because we could use some walkways and things.
Director Anderson.
Thanks, ma'am, Chair, and this is what a great partnership this has been, and obviously it could never have happened without the commitment of people like Ms. Carter, and I'm just, when you think about what we've done at the Issaquah Hatchery, this one is just right on the heels of that, and they're going to have to be careful. They may overtake it in terms of the benefits to the community
and
the educational opportunity.
The Colville Hatchery, too.
Yeah, the Colville Hatchery, too. I think what's really set this one apart, though, and special, is the educational opportunities reaching out to the local community to engage them and be a part of it. So thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Yesterday, we did a tour of intervention in the children from, or not children, they're 18 to 25-year-olds, a conservation group. And they had just done a big planting in Puyallup with 800 species on the creek. They were amazed. They didn't even know the hatchery existed, and it's like right in town. So they're going to come back every year with their new group of volunteers and do the tour. And it's great.
Great. Thank you. William Thomas. Okay, Mr. Cunningham.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name's Robert Cunningham, down from Bellingham again. It'll be a long drive. I'm here to voice my opposition to the proposed hydraulic code rules you'll be deciding this afternoon. Request you do not adopt them. Once again, the Habitat program brings before the Commission rules that not only do not have full support of the regulated community, but have not fulfilled all requirements of the Administrative Procedures Act. RCW 34.05.328, Significant Legislative Rules, Other Selected Rules, states, 3, before adopting rules described in subsection 5 of this section, an agency must place in the rulemaking file a rule implementation plan for rules filed under each adopting order. I refer you to the summary provided for item 7, HPA rules update, briefing and decision. On the last page of the brief, staff indicates that after adoption, as part of the communications plan, the rule implementation plan will be developed. The department has failed to develop and include the rulemaking package, the rule implementation plan required before rule adoption, leaving you no choice other than to not adopt the rules as proposed or withdraw the entire package. To do so, the failure to do so, will place the department out of compliance. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Bruce Beatty. Hey, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Bill Thomas. I sit before you once again, as I did in January and in August, to object to the development and modification of rules that directly affects the small-scale mineral prospecting community without any cooperation or meaningful role in their development. The department will tell you that they engage the community through public comments, public hearings, with one specifically focused on mineral prospecting rules. I have provided you with the comments from all these meetings, and the written comments can be found in the PIS. A review of the documents will show that not a single change has been made to the proposed beach rules since their debut 2 years ago in 4 different revisions. During 4 different public comment periods, with each comment was a legitimate concern and some excellent suggestions from the prospecting and mining community. We feel that the proposed rules are onerous, capricious, illegally requires permit for activities that have been exempted by statute, unconstitutionally prohibits an activity as a prospector or miner that any other person in the same spot can do, travels all over the legislative right for a meaningful role in the development of rules, entirely unnecessary as this activity is already being regulated by another agency. Another issue that has been lost by the department and is not addressed in the final PEIS. Each of his concerns have been addressed in the package I have provided you. And once again, just in the past, they bring before you a set of rules not widespread support of the regulated community. I ask that you review the information that I have provided to you and render a decision not to adopt the rules as proposed. And then, rather, make a motion that the proposal be withdrawn. Thank you.
Thank you. James Franklin, come forward. Okay, Mr. Beatty.
My name is Bruce Beatty from University Place. Must be a little bit nervous this morning, spilled my coffee on my... But you have a clean copy. I've been criticized in the past for bringing up the idea there, the subject of jurisdiction of the agency to regulate us on our mining claims in the National Forest and BLM lands. There's been a court case that has been concluded in the state of California, the People versus Brandon Reinhart in the Court of Appeal of the state of California, Third Appellate District, October 2014. You have a copy of this, three-judge panel opinion. This case once was unpublished and is now published, which means that this case can be used in future litigation. This fact is relevant because of Beatty versus WDFW and the possibility of this case being referred onto the Washington State Supreme Court from the Washington State Court of Appeals, Spokane, Washington. The subject of state presumption of preemption over the 1872 mining law as amended is addressed in both of these cases. Beatty versus WDFW has not yet been finalized by opinion. In the People versus Reinhart, the precedent of presumption of preemption by California is basically refuted. I therefore suggest that the commission postpone any vote on this proposed HPA sections regarding mineral prospecting until these cases are settled. In the Fundamental Principles of Federal Preemption section of the case, the judges quote, state law can be preempted in either of two general ways. If Congress evidences an intent to occupy a given field, any state law falling within that field is preempted. If Congress has not entirely displaced state regulation over the matter in question, state law is still preempted to the extent it actually conflicts with federal law. That is, when it is impossible to comply with both state and federal law, or where the state law stands as an obstacle to the accomplishment of the full purposes and objectives of Congress. Now, these are federally registered mining claims on federally managed lands. My case was over the fact that the agency wouldn't allow me more than 15 days to work in water on a claim that prior to that had 45 days, prior to that was allowed year-round. I would have to say that only 15 days on 2 miles of claim is not sufficient for me to even look at the claim economically, much less work. I hope you'll find your way to postpone this vote and do like Cindy Aaliyah says, give it another postponement until these cases are settled. Thank you.
Thank you. Melissa McFadden. Okay, Mr. Franklin.
Yeah, I'm also opposed to this permit. I'm also not familiar enough to talk, but I'm going to try. I'm a miner. I'm a third-generation miner. My dad, my grandpa. Well, anyway, I got some grandkids that I'd like to become miners. And I'd like to see some consistency into these rules. We go down to the ocean, skim a little black sand, pan it out, gold. A day later, we go down to the same place. The kids get out there, and they can dig in for clams. You know, I mean, if it's a clam dig, you can dig in certain areas, all the areas. But we go down as a gold miner, and we've only got little places that we can work. They won't let us go down along the water and stuff like that. You might mess up a growth shrimp or something like that, you know. So anyway, I'd like to see some consistency. I can't teach my grandkids how to mine with the rules we got right now. We'll go fishing. We can stand in the water, stand on the fish beds. We can stand where the fish are spawning. They'll swim underneath our feet and everything else. The next day, we go down there, want to go gold mining. Oh, no, you can't touch that. But we stood in it yesterday. Yeah, but you can't touch it now. You're a gold miner. You know, so I just want some consistency here that, you know, if I'm a fisherman, you know, fine. If I'm a gold miner, I should have the same rights as that fisherman does. Or the, you know, a person down there digging clams on the beach. There should be no special rules because we're a gold miner. And, I mean, we aren't hurting fish. I like to fish. I kill steelhead all the time. But when I'm a gold miner, I don't kill any fish. I've never sucked up a fish that I know of. I don't never have killed a fish that I know of. And so, I mean, it's just consistency is what I'd like to see. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. McFadden? Yeah.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Melissa McFadden. I'm the Mason County Engineer and also on the Executive Committee of the Washington State Association of County Engineers. I want to take a few moments of your time to talk to you about the HPA rules update that you'll be considering this afternoon. Perhaps you'll hear from staff that all comments around this issue have been addressed. I can tell you that's not the case from our perspective. Responses to most of the comments made by the Regional Road Maintenance Forum were dismissive or not addressed at all. As public servants, we're all required to provide a clear, accurate, complete explanation to our constituent, and we don't feel as though that's been done. Legal issues like expanded jurisdiction have not been fully explored or addressed. WDFW has failed to adequately address financial impacts from rulemaking. Local agency projects were completely left out of the analysis, supposedly because we would be required to go through federal resource agency process anyway. That's not the case. We often obtain HPAs for projects with no federal nexus. And if WDFW staff is so certain that there will be no financial impact to local agencies, then why not evaluate it and put the issue to rest? We're already seeing implementation of these rules by biologists in the field, and the results are impacting our work significantly. Anecdotally, one agency has reported that the timing of work above ordinary high water is being required by a biologist to occur within the fish window. Again, work above the ordinary high water mark. The result is that the project and its impacts to citizens will extend into two construction seasons rather than just the one season that's truly needed. On another project, a biologist is requiring the use of stream simulation, which will increase project costs by 20%. A nearby downstream culvert was designed fairly recently using the no-slope design method and is functioning appropriately. So I would ask, does that really make sense? We've received commendation from WDFW for some no-slope designs in the past, and I would urge the department to consider those. So we've repeatedly been asked by WDFW staff to accept the WAC revisions, then work with staff to clarify implementation. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of hope of that, given what we're already seeing. And we've not been engaged by WDFW since providing testimony in August. In closing, I would urge the Commission to consider postponing its decision on HPA rule updates until all legal questions have been resolved, all financial impacts have been evaluated, and all concerns have been adequately addressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes item number 2, the open public input.